Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only gorgeous, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy, because now everybody got a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and, disasters of every single make and model you could possibly conceive of. If you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. No fear, ladies and gentlemen. Only a few cackles. My very special guest is the lovely Alex Robinson. Alex, welcome to the programme.
Thank you.
I believe you're coming to us from Auckland as well.
That's right.
All right. Well, why don't you give us a bit of a background about yourself and who you are and what it is you do?
I have a blog called Too Long in This Place, and I've been writing since 2008, and it's kind of hard to explain what I do. I do it's a mixture of things, using intuition, synchronicity, questioning things. I mean, I think everyone who comes here at some point realizes that things just don't feel right in the world, and we all find our way here. And I just got to a sort of a time and a place where I just needed to say it out loud, you know, speak it out loud, to ask questions.
Okay, and what kind of set you off on this wee journey here?
There was quite a few things, but I guess I put it back to seeing the Anzac War Memorial statue in Sydney back in about 2007. And at the time, I was reading a book by Matthew Deleuze. I don't know if you've heard about him.
But no.
The reading and sort of what I was seeing around Sydney, the symbolism, you know, things like that. But it was seeing this statue that really shocked me, and the whole, my son and I happened to be there at the time when it was 11 o'clock and they do the, you have to stand still for 2 minutes and, you know, sort of give honour to all these, all the dead. And the symbolism and the, it's kind of hard to explain the effect that had on me, but the sacrifice, the statue, is really quite shocking. And I've done a lot of work looking into Anzac, the history of the Anzacs, a lot of looking into New Zealand, and just so much doesn't make sense and so much doesn't add up. And I just keep looking and keep asking questions.
So specifically an Anzac memorial that woke you up and kind of just made you sort of jump out of jump out of your seat or your skin, as it were, just go, you know what, something's really, really wrong. I have to do something.
Yeah, very basically, yes. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I've always felt that way about the Anzac things as well. Like Anzac Day, we celebrate it every year, and I see these politicians who are mired in corruption scandals and things of that nature laying wreaths and saying we must honour the dead and their sacrifice while we corruptly take over the country. And it infuriates me.
Oh, it's a massive sham. And the whole Anzac thing is a concocted thing between, you know, Australia and New Zealand. I mean, there's all this thing about Gallipoli. And it's as if there was only New Zealanders and Australians at Gallipoli. When in actual fact, like my great-granduncle was there. He was Irish. We never hear about that. So it's like we took possession of this. You know, this is our thing. And we built, I think it's because Australia and New Zealand don't have a long history. So we built up this kind of sham, amazing, you know, look what we did, look who we are.
It's kind of like somebody who doesn't really have a life pointing to the one time that they actually did and say that this is what I am.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of how we've been shaped. And the sham of, when, you know, Anzac Day is coming upon us, and at the end of the day, what's war? It's just massive slaughter. And when I looked into the Anzacs, there's this very strange thing where they took them and they went to the Middle East, and they set up the camp, the Anzac camp, directly beneath the pyramids. Now, it's just really, really bizarre. Why would you do that? It's very, very strange. So kind of looking at the symbolism of what was all that about, why would you, and just feeling like the whole, you know, Anzac thing has so much to do with sacrifice, like symbolic sacrifice and, you know, so forth, things like that.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. You know, why would they camp out all underneath the pyramids and stuff? Maybe some kind of Illuminati blood sacrifice ritual or something?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really use the word Illuminati, but yes, that's sort of, there's a lot of stuff. There's so much that we don't understand, and there's so much that so many people aren't willing to look at or just question and go, hey, this is really weird. I don't know what the answer is, but isn't this kind of really weird?
Yeah, the whole system doesn't really make sense to me, and I think that was what I was like, what I was like as a young man, and why I got into trouble so much. I think I got suspended like 17 times from school, Alex. You know, and that was just one of the schools that I went to. I've got expelled from a number. It's because nothing made sense to me, and when I tried to ask them, you know, what the heck is going on here, I'd be treated as being insubordinate and be expelled or suspended again. And well, that's not entirely dissimilar to what happens in general society as well. You know, you got an employer or you're in the political game or something like that. As soon as you start questioning and demanding answers and things like that, you're a bad person.
Where I'm getting to, I'm trying to understand why does that happen, you know? Why is it that you want to ask questions and you cannot make the connection with the other person? They cannot hear you. And I get this feeling that there is no framework there for them to understand. They're living in a particular structure, and this is how it is. Now, some of us say, I'm not happy. This structure doesn't work for me. It doesn't feel right. I want to look a different way. But the people who are within the structure will do everything to protect that structure, and they cannot see or contemplate or even want any other kind of structure. So we're trying to create a framework of something new. And it's very, very difficult, hard work, and you get squashed and stood on and people knock you all the time. But it's this delicacy of trying to create a framework where there actually is nothing before. So we're going from nothing and trying to build something. And at the same time, there are people who keep trying to crush it, break it down. And you just have to bend yourself in all different kind of weird shapes to try and get across to people. A lot of the time now, I haven't bothered. I will just work towards the people who want to build a different framework as well. What is the point of trying to reach to people who Their ears are so close, their mind is so close, and they will fight you to protect the system and the structure that they are within.
They don't understand that waking up isn't something that's quite so ethereal and what have you. The analogy of the Matrix, as we're kind of alluding to here, is very, very real. When you wake up and you suddenly realize the whole world is against you, and there's all this scumbaggery and symbolism and this kind of stuff, and it's just not real anymore, that life that you thought that you had. It reminds me of what Neo did when he found out about the truth. He said, "No, no, I don't believe it." And then he passed out and vomited on the floor.
It's hard work. It's really hard work, and you don't know where you're going, and no one has any answers. No one has any answers. You know, they might say that they do, but they don't. And as soon as you think you have an answer, the route changes and you're somewhere else. So it's a constant. What I really like to use is Edward de Bono, the guy who did lateral thinking. He talks about proto-truths. So a proto-truth, which is a name he made up, is the truth that is the most real at the moment. It works the best at the moment. But at any point, it can be changed, added to, got rid of, and something new brought in. So we have this kind of flexible, living, working kind of truth. There isn't this one, the truth. So I like to work with that and use synchronicity, intuition, research, whatever, to follow along that, explore it. So much to me is about if we could just explore things. Look, how does this look for you? What does this feel like for you? This is what happens so much with people who are stuck within the structure, is that they're not willing to look, so they won't give us any feedback. They won't explore it.
Well, if this lack of exploration is the very reason why everybody's basically burrowed themselves into this sort of backward corner and just going, no, no, nothing else exists except for the things that I want to exist. It's no wonder society's going like to hell in a handbasket, being controlled by people who are manipulative. You know, that's what I've determined, is that, you know, you have a look at the symptoms of what a psychopath is. The American Medical Journal stated that these people are really smiley, friendly, kind of intoxicating people when you first meet them. But there's no real depth to their personality. They don't have a whole lot of long-lasting relationships outside of some pretext of business or something like that. And the three most likely industries you are to find these people is business, politics, and media. And I was just thinking to myself, holy cow! That describes almost perfectly every employer that I've had my entire life and every politician that I've ever seen ruling my country for my entire life as well. So we're under the control of a psychopathic system, right? These psychopaths might not be aware of the plan, overall plan, but they're all certainly playing their part.
To my mind, where I've got to now is to see that the West is a trauma-based society. Everything about the West, and right from the word go, is trauma. So right from even, you know, the birthing processes, through schooling, everything from every angle is creates trauma. And trauma of itself is not bad. I mean, we don't want trauma. Trauma's not nice. But the toxicity and the poison that comes with trauma is when you're not allowed to heal. And that's where I see the problem is. The human body can handle so much in terms of the foods we eat or the stresses we're under. But we need to be able to release, heal from, come back to balance. And I think that's where I see the problem is. We're not allowed to come back to balance. What happens is that you have trauma on top of trauma on top of trauma, and never can you come back to balance. And for me, this balance, so much of it comes when you're allowed to speak and explore and talk things out. So much healing comes from just being allowed to talk things out. Say, this is how it feels for me. You know, how does it feel for you? This doesn't seem right. This doesn't look right. Doesn't this seem strange to you? You know, but there is this lid, and God forbid that anyone should ever express emotion, be unhappy, yet not have this smile on their face, not kowtow to these idiots who are in charge all over the place. They are psychopathic, you know? And I think if our senses worked well, I know a previous boss of mine, I felt like if my senses worked well, I would see this decomposing corpse in front of me.
With the evacuated bowels and everything. Hey, that was the other thing that occurred to me while you were saying that is, you know, heaven forbid somebody show a real emotion or have or actually be, you know, crying or something like that and be in real need of some emotional cajoling, as it were. And I was just thinking about this phenomenon. Has anybody ever asked you, you know, how are you? And they actually don't give a frack how you are. it's a proto hello. You know, instead of saying hello, how are you? It's just saying how are you, as opposed to hello, and they don't really care about the response. I remember one time I tried to what was I doing? I was walking along the street trying to say hello to everybody as they went past. It was just to do a bit of an experiment. As one guy rocked past me, he went, "Get him, mate." He said, "Good day, mate," but he did it so fast in an effort to get away from somebody who was actually having some social interaction that he didn't even know. They say, "Get him out," and then they keep walking.
Yep.
And I think that's what's going on here, really, is that people don't give a frack about how each other is. And as a direct result, people feel neglected and mental illness and indeed stress itself bubbles away. And people will just get worse and worse and worse and retreat inwards because they feel like nobody cares about them. And for the most part, they're correct.
That's right. Again, we're not allowed emotion. I've just written an article, actually, about the importance of dislike and that we're not allowed to dislike things. You know, we're supposed to you've got to put a smile on your face all the time, you know. And I had someone have a go at me a few weeks ago at the beach because I was obviously glowering. I was thinking deeply and, you know, I spent so long afterwards. I just walked the entire beach swearing my head off, you know, like, how dare you? If my face isn't happy and smiling, what is that to do with you? And a little while ago, I went out for a walk and thought, I'm going to practice dislike. What do I dislike? And at the end of it, I found, hey, I really don't like fences. You know, I don't like fences. I never even knew that. And I know that sounds really silly, but what I got to thinking was, if I didn't know that I don't like fences, they really bug me, how many other things are there in my life that I don't know that I dislike? Therefore, I'm just accepting them. I'm letting them be in my life. And again, it seems to me it's this shutdown of emotions. I think in childhood, we're shut down. You have to like. There's so many things you have to be forced. You have to force yourself to like.
That's true. And one person once told me once when we were drunk at a party, "Vinny, is there anything you hate?" And I go, I don't know. And they go, "What about gangs?" And I go, whoa, hold on a second. You just reminded me. Yes, I freaking hate the gangs, especially the one in blue uniforms. We'll be right back after the break.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. My very special guest is with me, Alex Robinson from TooLongInThisPlace.wordpress.com. That's TooLongInThisPlace. That's one word, which is several words, but there's all strung together. .wordpress.com. Alex, welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, in terms of the education system, and I wanted to get into this a little bit. I mean, I'm just explained a little bit about my school history, of course, rather sordid. I was wondering how you actually survived going through school, or unless, of course, you were homeschooled or something.
No, it was certainly not the best years of your life. You know, I don't know who made that up, but I was the opposite to you. I was very, 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 very good. Very good. And, I think I'm doing my teenage rebellion now. But It was really hard on me, but everything about my childhood was hard, both home and school. There was no break for me. And in fact, I ended up leaving school, going straight into Auckland Hospital as an anorexic. So, and definitely part of that is the whole schooling system. It's inhuman. There is a brilliant book written by an American who was a teacher. And when I read it, things I'd never even thought about, just the inhumanity of, like, you put everyone together who's just in the same year. And maybe you might have had really good friends above or below you, but you never mix. You always stay with these same group of people just because they're the same age. You know, and in society, in a healthy society, the older ones look after the younger ones, but you don't have any of that. And this whole, like, having hour-long segments, and no matter what you're doing, the bell goes, you have to stop. There's so many things that break the natural human, the nature of how we are, how we're meant to be. Schooling just, it just cracks and breaks it from every angle. I find it so inhuman. When my son was about 11 or 12, and he was saying that he didn't like it, and I was about to go into the spiel, well, you know, you just got to, you know, you've got to get through. And then I just realized, no, you're right. You're right. School is shit. I mean, school is awful. And from then on, we never lied about it. And I said, look, you know, you get a day off every term, your choice, whenever you want. So we always had that little bit to fall back on as he got older, you know, 2 days off, you know, and I would make excuses for him. I saw the inhumanity of the whole system. It's so inhuman, but you're not allowed to say it. God forbid that you should speak out about it.
You know, it would be interesting to see an angry parent get up and speak at a school assembly and tell the entire school how crap the entire school really is and how it's merely a trauma-based mind control program in order to indoctrinate them into being the next generation of slaves.
You see, that there is no framework there for them to hear that. There is nothing within them that allows that information to pass through into their conscious awareness. They are fully protecting the system. They believe in it. They sold themselves. They gave themselves to it. And now they are its loyal soldiers, you know.
Well, this is indeed the problem, and also the reason why I came up with the idea that we needed a new school system, and not one that replaces the current one, but one that runs along parallel. Like, if you don't want the public idea of the school system or whatever, you can go into this new school system, which will teach you about real history, real health, about metaphysics and synchronicity and all of these good things that we've learned basically as part of the truth movement, which can be, admittedly, an extremely rude and traumatic awakening, simply to know just a few of the very things that are going on in this world. And the other element of this is, would parents even take that opportunity, or would they be so blinded by government propaganda that they would prefer their children to come home every day bored and miserable, complaining about how much school sucks, as opposed to coming home excited, happy, that they learned something new and amazing today?
Well, see, you sort of bring up a point, which is where my work is going, and again, it's very hard to talk about, but as far as I can see, the world is run by parents, because what the parents shape their children, they affect their children in so many ways, and parents are the result of parents who are the result of trauma. You have these trauma generations of traumatized parents who put the trauma on the new generation, and that is why you won't get the parents to hear you. You know, you're not looking at healthy individuals. You are looking at people who are so indebted to the system, who are so loyal to the system, and they will pass it down to their children, and they will. This work that we do is so massive. It's so complex. It's about the future. It is about giving children real life, giving them the opportunity to... It's about not crushing them. It's not that we actually need to do much for children. They're fine as they are. It's what we need to not do to them. to crush their spirits, to force them into all so much inhumanity. You know, the cruelty to children is extreme, and it's so much of it is you can't see it. It looks as if, oh, this is for the best thing for my children, you know? These days, how many children are, like, pushed into how many things they have to do after school when, you know, really, for the health, they should be at home just, you know, playing with their friends, mucking about with their friends, but no, they've got to go to all these organized events, they've got to learn this. And why is that? How much of that is about how it makes the parents look good?
Yeah. I know the type you're talking about. My son goes to this and that after school activity. My son has awards. My son has trophies. My son has this, that, and the other. Did you know your son is also addicted to pot and freaking hates you?
Yeah.
because of the traumatic stuff that you've made him go through, you know?
That's right. I mean, and so much, it's this, one of the biggest things that I've seen is to understand we live in a world where parents own their children. That is the concept. We, 100%. You know, the other day I was just walking, there was this guy just being so horrible to his son, you know? And I turned around, I did my best to turn around and say, look, I can see what you're doing. And he just like, yeah, what are you looking at, you know? And there was nothing I could do. Because he owns his child. He can do whatever he wants. This idea of child ownership just goes back, it's eons old. As if there is something or so many things that need to be done to children. In actual fact, they are fine. We're the ones who need to be learning from the children. We're the ones who are so mucked up in our heads, not the children.
It's the children that need to be left alone and the adults who need to grow up, in other words.
It's the adults who need to learn from the children. There is a wonderful book by a guy called Ashley Montague, and it's called Growing Young. And it's based on a, I don't know if it's a science, it's a whatever, it's called neoteny, which says that in a species that doesn't change its shape much from when it's a baby, so humans, we don't change much from when we are babies, you know, we grow higher, we get a bit hairier, but we're not much different. Whereas other animals, they change quite distinctly from their baby stage to their adult stage, like chimpanzees, you know, their faces become elongated. They change a lot. So he was saying their belief is that if you don't change much, if your species doesn't change much, then they're meant to keep the characteristics of the young. So the characteristics of the young in humanity are curiosity, play, spontaneity, exploration, all these things. But what happens? Where does all that go to? So according to Neoteny, we are meant to keep those characteristics. That's what we need for our species to evolve, to grow, to continue.
Yeah, whereas the problem is they've replaced neoteny with monotony.
Yeah, well, it's called gerontology, where you go towards the older, you know. But yeah, we're meant to keep all these young traits.
And you're pretty lucky if you manage to keep on to them.
Oh, you know, at one point I was researching play, and basically, if you look on the internet, up to 12 years of age, children can play. After that, you type in the word play on the internet, adult play, and you just sex toys. Adult play is about sex toys. It's about, So what happened to play for adults? Now, God, I would love to see an adult's playground. We need them so bad. You know, we need this ability to play. We've become so rigid.
Yeah, and we're not talking about like an adult playground as in like a monkey bars with dildos or something like that. We're talking about something. Here's the other thing, speaking of climbing frames, how exactly does an adult have fun these days? And what you're talking there about, exploration, creativity, I think adults are more closer to building things, creating things, making works of art and things of that nature. Like the things that kids do when they're building with, say, their Lego or their Duplo, or they're doing finger painting or things of that nature, there's actual adult versions of them where an adult can actually make a real masterpiece painting. A child's not capable of creating something with that that complexity or that... or that high standard of workmanship as a child does, but an adult can do that. And does that count as play? Is that really what we're talking about here? Simply taking the same things that children are currently doing, but just adultifying them so that there's an element of extra quality or something like that to it. Is that what we're talking about here?
I've actually started up a site with a Kiwi friend of mine, which is about trying to encourage people to get back to play, to creating. See, we've got this idea that creativity is special and that there are creative people out there, and then there's the rest of us plebs who are just, well, we go and appreciate people who are really good. We can't do it. And that's just so much rubbish, you know. And again, through the media has told us there are great artists, there are great writers, there are great blah, 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 blah. And we never can compete with them, so just give up now. And so many people are terrified to even pick up like a paintbrush, or they're terrified to even try and do something. And yet this is, if Neoteny is correct, this is our nature, to pick up a paintbrush or pick up a pencil and just go for it. And everything really comes down to practice, you know? If you pick up a paintbrush and the first thing you do is, well, it's going to be pretty crap. But that's just normal. You just keep practicing. You just play. You get better. You learn things. So what I've started doing is using Paint, and you know, on the computer and the accessories. It's a really, really basic program, and it's so much fun. And I just keep getting better. And I'm trying to encourage other people to do the same thing. Anything they want, photography, whatever. Send it into the site. We put it up there, and it's just. People are terrified. There's actually like a phobia against creating. We have a phobia.
I think it's the fear of rejection. You know, oh, that photo you took isn't very good, you know, from other adults and stuff like that. We hate that.
Oh, we're terrified of it because we're terrified of looking stupid. This is looking stupid, looking foolish is one of the biggest control mechanisms within the West.
See, I love looking foolish. I mean, just look at my hair.
I believe the fool in tarot is the beginner. The fool is the one who starts anything. The fool is the pioneer. Whenever you start something, you're going to be messy. You're going to be, it's not going to look good. You're going to fall over. You're going to look silly. That is the most sacred place in humanity because that's the birth process. That is the starting of something.
That's what humbles you, you know, for tripping over and falling. And you go, you know, maybe I'm not as sure-footed as a mountain goat as I thought.
Yeah, but children don't even have that. They don't even need to feel humble. When they fall over, all they know is they want to walk. So back they up again. You know, there is nothing. They don't feel foolish. They just, damn, do it again, do it again, do it again. They never give up.
Maybe as adults we reflect back quite constantly on the times that we've messed up and feel ashamed of it. I get that a lot. Do you?
Explain.
Well, let's say you've done something in your life that was really stupid. Like you said something stupid to somebody, and they suddenly go out of whack or out of control, and they mess up your life as a result of it. And you know, you get better and everything, and that kind of part of your life goes back. But every now and again, you'll think of that person, and just go, "Oh God, I was so stupid. Why did I say that?" Like what's his name? Rob Tappert. He's the producer of like The Grudge, The Grudge 2, and a whole bunch of other horror movies like The Evil Dead. Is married my cousin Lucy Lawless, and I tried to pitch to him like a book of my friend that I hadn't even read, you know, that he was trying to make into a film, and I just totally ballsed it up. And it's like every now and again I'll think back to that moment and just go, frack, I was such a young idiot.
But those things that we do that about are actually massively important. Because they teach us so much. That's a little bit along the lines of the ability to know what we dislike. We need to muck up because we go, oh, that feels really bad. I don't want to go down that track. Now, I really know I don't want to go down that track again. It teaches you.
Well, it's fair enough. I'm just wondering why I keep looking back at these lessons that I've supposedly already learned and keep feeling bad about it. It's weird. We'll be right back after the break. Alex Robinson is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? What you know about the bleeding uranium in the mortar? What you know about AIPAC controlling the reporter? What's
Welcome
wrong
back.
With the world? People kill people that other people can...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's my final segment with the lovely Alex Robinson from Too Long in This Place.wordpress.com. So we've kind of coming full circle here. We started off talking about Anzacs and the military and the psychopaths in control and how much school freaking sucks and how much adults need to start playing a bit more. And it occurred to me over the break, if you're playing an instrument in a band, that's kind of like an adult form of play, isn't it? With other big kids around you? The creative process?
As long as you're enjoying it. As long as you're enjoying it, you know?
Hmm.
That's the thing. What you get fun out of, what makes you feel alive?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward and fundamental like that, isn't it? Does it feel good for you? Well, yes, it does. Well, then it is good for you. Unless, of course, it's something like artificial sweetener.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure there's a lot of practices out there that are basically like the artificial sweeteners of the mind, you know, like watching television or movies endlessly or video games. You know, I play a bit of video games myself, and it occurred to me last time I played it, I was just like, man, I just spent like a whole hour doing this, and I've got absolutely nothing to show for it apart from an hour that just got wasted.
Yeah. It's like that. It's like with so many things, whether it's the TV will just take up your so much time. But I have a theory. I've done a reasonable bit of work about looking into the dark, into the nighttime, and how much how important that is for us. And like I daily go out for walks at night in the dark. It's a completely different atmosphere. It's a different feel. There's almost nobody on the streets. Everyone's inside. There's the lights flashing in the house. So people go to work. They get exhausted from a long day of doing something ridiculous and just wasting their time. Come home. They're so tired. Sit in front of the TV all night. But I believe that there's a very healing power in the nighttime, in the darkness, that we're missing out on. And that's part of what the TV is about. It's just keeping you away. When you go outside, the light, you know, lights everywhere. I don't know if you've seen the new lights on the cars, which are so bright. You know, everywhere, there's no place for us to go and be in the dark. The darkness is where everything is born. Like winter is actually the beginning of the year, not spring. Anything that's going to be born, it's always in the dark first. And I wonder if this is another reason why we're not progressing, we're not evolving. We've lost our connection to the place that we need to be in, which is the darkness and the night.
Mm. There's many, many vampires out there who would agree with you.
Yeah, well, good for them. Well, they're probably having fun anyway.
Yeah, sleeping on the necks of various celebrities in deep underground Los Angelino clubs, no doubt. In terms of the night, and I completely agree with you on this one, because I find a lot of my best ideas come to me like in the wee small hours, you know, the witching hours or whatever, not necessarily when it's dark. But when I go outside, I notice something being here in the city is that I've been out in the country many, many times. You look up in the sky and it's like you're covered in a blanket of stars. And in the city... You know, there's a lot of them, but it's nothing like that. You know, you can't see the edge of the Milky Way galaxy like you can when you're out in the country. You're not completely bathed in this starlight. It's like there's a haze from all this light pollution, and it makes me feel almost under pressure, if you know what I mean. As opposed to when you're out and there's no lights and you can see all the stars, kind of thing. I don't know why that is or why it makes me feel like that.
I think it's actually to do with light. I think light puts us under pressure. Like, you, in the daytime, when the sun's shining, everyone's busy, busy, busy doing things. It's almost like you've got to be doing something. Whereas the darkness is a very much about settling down, quieting down. And, I mean, you just see people out there in the... They can't stop during the day. And, again, you put your lights on at night, you can't stop. It just... I think it actually speeds up our physical, our bodies, our system. If you could probably watch on some kind of brain monitoring thing, you will probably see that there's things firing off all over the place when light is being, you know, when light is just too much light is entering our eyes. And I'm quite sure that our eyes have a great need for darkness as well. I mean, you know, if you've got a headache and you switch off the light, my God, how good does it feel? You know, it's just bliss.
I didn't know that.
Oh, it does. It's good.
I just thought headaches were just like a usually dehydration, so I just chug back some water and it's gone.
Okay, well, try the darkness. It's wonderful.
Try the darkness.
Yeah, go over to the dark side.
Yeah.
Look, it'll make you feel better.
Hey, so we've only got another 5 minutes left on here. My special guest, ladies and gentlemen, is Alex Robinson. Too long in this place. WordPress.com is her website. I was wondering if you have any particular words of wisdom, you know, as a mother, as a creative woman, and things of that nature. Do you have any real special candid advice that you'd like to give the listenership? I'll take that as a no.
Well, that's a...
I'm just joking.
Question.
Yeah.
But, hey, I thought I was going to hang around with Alan Green for the next hour.
Are you now? Okay.
Yeah.
In that case, maybe I've done a little something premature.
But I can go. It doesn't matter.
No. Stick around with Alan, because maybe I was just a little bit confused, because I think Guillaume, who's... By the way... in fact, I'll take this opportunity to thank Guillaume for getting all these wonderful guests this week. Thank you, bro. He's done a week for us before, ladies and gentlemen, one with Anthony Peake and a whole bunch of other really great guests within there. And he's organized this entire week of guests as well. For those of you who have been in the background of any radio programs, you know that organizing guests can be rather difficult, time-consuming, making sure everybody's in the same time zones and they've got their stuff worked out and what have you. He's done a really fabulous job. So I want to just take my hat off just quietly to him for, basically giving me a week of reprieve from organizing all the guests for myself. And this actually brings us to another point as well about collaboration. Because when you're in high school and things of that nature, I don't know about you, Alex, but I don't have any friends from high school anymore. Nor primary school, nor university, nor any employment opportunity that I've ever actually had before. Okay, I've got plenty of friends, none of them from those institutions that I was forced to work in. and I think there's a very good reason for that. It's because none of those people that I ever met or was, kind of friends with at the time had really any idea what the heck was going on and was actually really just believed in all of it, whereas, you know, I just kind of didn't, and I just didn't really want to be alone at those particular times. And it's great when you move out of that system and you start doing what is right. You get the right people starting to show up and work with you rather than working against you in your life. They're not wasting your time. They're actually saving you time. You know, they're not making your life something less meaningful. They're actually making it less meaningless, if you know what I mean. And this is something that I believe most people should be striving for, is attempting to be in contact with people that are inspiring, people that encourage you, and people that can help you, people who care about you, that kind of thing. That is really what's most important about this. Imagine if you were to fall into some bad trouble or something like that. You know, I had a bit of bad trouble on the show a couple of weeks ago, and I still haven't gotten through answering all the Skype messages and emails and Facebook messages and stuff that have all been coming at me, you know, pouring out of support, because there's just so much of it out there because I'm doing the right thing, you know, trying to help people get some freaking coverage. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I must admit, I think you must be, I don't know how you do what you do, because you must not be able to rest very much. to meet so many different people to try and, you know, get across, allow people a platform. And I think that's one of the things that we have to do, actually, is where we find that there's no platform for us to speak. There's no platform to do what we need to do. And what happens is we have to create it. So it didn't exist. You know, when I'm talking about creating, people think creating, oh, that's about going and doing some painting or something. It is not. It is about bringing into being something that doesn't exist because you really, really want it to exist. So in this instance, you've got this show, I've got my blog, other people have got things that they didn't exist. They made them exist. This is the creative process at its heart.
I've had a lot of people tell me they don't know how I do what I do. And I think they just don't understand how much of a lazy person I actually really am. I mean, basically, if you want to get a lot done, but you can't be bothered, try and figure out a really, really, really easy way. And in fact, this is something that one of our guests said yesterday. Tesla versus, who was the other guy? Edison. Edison says it's 99% perspiration, 1% inspiration. So he'll experiment 100 times or whatever before he gets something right. Tesla says it's 99% inspiration, 1% perspiration. If you sit there and really, really think and mull over what you want and how to create it and what you want to do, as soon as you implement it, you build it right first time and you don't have to repeat yourself 100 times over. That's kind of the methodology that I think we should all be following a little more closely so that we don't waste our time in the repetition, mind control, and scumbaggery. My very special guest is Alex Robinson. She'll be joining us over the break with my other very special friend, Ellen Abadesa-Green from The Sync Book. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking about synchronicity and a whole bunch of very interesting, inspirational, fabulous Shiite Muslim. It's going to be somewhat fabulous, fantastic. And whatnot, various other nice adjectives too. Back in a minute.